Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Mike Villagrana. Our show is brought to you by Happy Valley United. Mike, of course, the executive director over at HVU. You know, Mike, everyone of our listeners knows I'm a huge Mets fan. And years ago, there was an announcer who, after any game the Mets won, his post-game show, he would go, "We're all ready now for the happy recap." That's how I feel about today's show. We've got the happy recap.
Yeah, heck yeah. I think it was an awesome way to end the season. Terry continuing to, you know, show who he is and represent Penn State the way that he has. I think all of it with the wins, the four straight wins, or, you know, to end it like that, it was awesome, man. For me, I felt good for the team. I felt good for the players. I felt good for everybody, the whole Penn State community. Like, it's just, it feels good going into a very optimistic offseason too. So it's good momentum. I think I talked about this last week or the week before about momentum. And regardless of the bowl, regardless of anything, when you win a bowl game, that adds momentum going into the offseason. No matter what, it does.
It has to. Winning is better than losing, right?
Absolutely. That's what that's the bottom.
And I really don't like, and I'm seeing a lot of this on forums and message boards, this, "Oh, what do we care? The game didn't matter." Well, are you saying that other than playing for the playoffs, none of these games matter? If you go down that path, you know, as soon as Penn State lost their second or third game of the year, the season was over. Nothing mattered after that. Sometimes you just have to say, hey, how about winning the game for the sake of winning the game?
Yeah, but I think it's even more than that to me. I think this is a big discussion nationally as far as bowl games, what bowl games are going to be in the future. Me and you are kind of old school being brought up in the bowl era, but I think there's a world where we don't see these bowl games, or it's going to be completely reformatted here soon. But I think this bowl game, you know, considering all the different things that's happened with Penn State, you know, as a whole, this whole story, this whole book this year, you know, this bowl game was more than just a regular bowl game to them. You know, there was a lot of different things that were being played in factor with this bowl game. Who's playing? Who's opting out? You know, Coach Campbell and the new staff evaluating these players is another opportunity. So it was more than just, you know, just another bowl game.
It was a measuring stick for where is the program right now. And there were enough players who not just played, Mike, but I got the feeling that they cared about the game. Now, that may seem like a silly statement, but I think we've all seen games where players have almost checked out, okay? They're going through the motions. I thought this team played with a nice emotion. I think they really wanted it.
Yeah, I think they did too. I think the biggest thing that was surprising to me was Denai playing.
Yes.
You know, especially after all of his other teammates are playing or weren't playing, a lot of them through the opt-outs. And to be fair, a lot of the times these kids, they're just going off the recommendations of these agents that they need, right? And so they're just going off of their recommendations, and those agents are just doing what everybody else is doing. So they're kind of a little handicapped. So I think it's a little unfair, some of the criticism those guys get. But it is fair too, in a sense. But when Denai plays like that, and he's probably one of the highest, he probably has some of the highest draft stock, you know, going for him going into that game, and then for him to play and then have the game that he did, I thought it was a great sign of who he is, in a way to end his career, to be honest. Like that was awesome, especially with the Deion Barnes going to South Carolina to coach, that dynamic. You know, there was just a lot of like storylines, I guess, with this game. That's why, to me, it was more than just, you know, another bowl game. There were so many other things that, as a Penn State fan and somebody that's close to the program, I was really, really intrigued by.
Well, the thing, you bring up a good point with Denai Dennis Sutton, and I don't think most fans look at the guys who opt out who are NFL players. If you look at it logically, Denai Dennis Sutton is going to sign a very big contract to play in the NFL. If he says, if he chooses not only A, not to risk that with an injury, but also B, to go off and start working out towards the combine, meaning he's working out to improve those numbers, that raises his draft status, raises his earning level, all of those things. So, you know, dollars and cents, it's easy for me to look at that and say, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. So when a guy like Denai Dennis Sutton does choose to play the whole game, plays well, and with that much enthusiasm, Mike, that really is impressive.
Yeah, it makes the game fun to watch, even though – you know, you got a quarter of the team sitting out. Yeah, it makes you proud to be around those guys and know those guys when, you know, they do certain things like that. You know, it's like Vega, you know, after the Ohio State loss, you know, everybody's down in the dumps, but, you know, he has the awareness to do something like just human. And when these guys do stuff like that, that's what makes them different from other players. To me, they're Pence. I always say that, you know, just Penn State players are different, and they are. And what Denai did, you know, that made him different to me. That's what Penn State is. You know, he put on the pads one more time, regardless of the money that he has gone. He's one of the better earners on this year's team. He still played, and in a way, like, I wasn't very close to Denai, but I'm around him a lot. And, like, in a way, I'm, like, just proud. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of, you know, Deion and that relationship that they had and the obstacles they worked through this year. And then for him to end it like that, I love it. I love it for him.
Well, on the other end of the spectrum, Mike, we've got, first of all, I think through all this, many of us knew when there was only a handful of guys who were opting out, we were waiting for the other shoe to drop. We thought there would be more, and there were. First of all, the guys who, at least it was announced late that they weren't going to they were opting out of the game. Was the coaching staff aware of this ahead of time? Was it just because they didn't put out an announcement saying it, meaning the players or the coach? And Terry, unless he's directly asked, hey, is Nick Dawkins going to play? Just nobody says anything, but the coaching staff is aware.
Yeah, I don't know firsthand, to be honest, Jim, and to the audience. But I think the feeling that I got was that I think there was just each one was his own case. And I think they were all getting dealt with and negotiated between agents, GM, and new head coach. Interim head coach. Like, I just think there was a lot of things going on to that decision for each of those guys. So I don't think there was ever like a real deadline. I just think, you know, they had to come to a conclusion. And when it came out, I think probably a lot of those decisions came to the last hour, you know, whether or not they were going to, you know, whether they're going to opt out or not. But, you know, it's part of the business now that we got to adapt to. It's a business. These guys have, you know, the guys that have ran out of eligibility now that have, you know, it's, you know, they got a lot of money on the line, you know, the next couple of months. So, I get it. I don't love it, to be honest, but I do get it.
Well, I think, what, I don't know, bother me might be too strong. But what leads me to question is, you see a Catron Allen decide not to play Nick Singleton. Hey, those guys, without a doubt, have an NFL career coming up. But the offense, Vega Ioane, no doubt, are going to be a high draft pick. The other guys on the offensive line who, you know, chose not to play, and this is just a layperson's opinion, I'm not sure they're all NFL guys, Mike, and that's what makes me wonder, you know, are they perhaps giving up their last chance to put on the uniform and get a chance to play football?
Yeah, but I don't think that's what they think, right? There's always a perception of what the player thinks their value is on the field and what a fan or a coach thinks. Usually when there's like a lot of transparency between, you know, now the agents, family, coaches, and an athlete, the better this makes it easy. But I just think a lot of these guys, everyone is different, though. That's the thing. Like, I don't want everybody to, like, just bulk these guys up in one crew, the opt-out crew, and think, like, they all did it for the same reason. They're all doing it for different reasons, right? Some maybe for the NFL. Maybe they are planning on going into the transfer portal. But I think a lot of them, you know, they may think, you know, they have more value than – what was perceived to them this year. So maybe they think they'll have a better opportunity if they opt out of this bowl game and then they enter themselves in the transfer portal and they find a better home or a better fit for them. And that's their prerogative. They can do that. And that's their right. And it sucks, right, as a fan and somebody old school like us and most of the audience, but that's just how it is now. And it's unfortunate, but the more information and resources we can give these players about what their value is as a current player, because it used to be we really invest in all these resources and all these different companies that can help these athletes and their parents and their agents with making a decision to go to the NFL or not, right? But now it's like, all right, what is your value as a player now? And what, like, the fact that there's no collective bargaining, there's no like real sense of what market value is. So it's tough. It's tough right now. And, you know, again, it's like the opt-outs. Like, I get it. I don't like it, but I do. I get it. I get it from a business standpoint.
All right. That's going to be it for quarter number one. Quarter two, we're going to talk about the game. Stay tuned.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United. This is quarter number two of our show. He is Mike Villagrana, Executive Director of HVU. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about the Penn State Pinstripe Bowl win over Clemson, 22-10. Let's get to the game itself. Mike, first of all, what's your take on bowl games up north like this in the cold weather?
I don't like it. I don't like where bowl games have gone. I don't like that bowl games have been diminished just because I've been – I have a different take on this just because – I played for West Virginia at a time when West Virginia had just hired Rich Rodriguez. They weren't like a blue collar, they weren't a blue blood, right? The top tier of teams, and he was just building his program to get it to what it was. So before we went to the Fiesta Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, whatever, we played in the Gator Bowl, right? Those Gator Bowls were pivotal to our development and the success that we eventually ended up having. So those bowl games are really crucial for programs like that. Now, a Blue Blood, a Michigan, Ohio State, a Penn State, they get in these bowl games. They need to find different ways to motivate their kids to play in them sometimes. But I personally love the bowl games, but I don't love how the bowl games are in the current structure of college football. So and that's why I don't think I don't know how many years, I just don't see a place where they exist. I've heard people, you know, from national media, you know, consider, but wanting to consider maybe at the beginning of the season. That seems a little weird. It's just, I don't know. It's tough because these kids, with the way that football is now, these bowl games aren't going to be as important to them.
And that is going to be the case. It already is, Mike. And I had this discussion. I was with my family over the weekend celebrating our Christmas. In fact, it was Saturday, and I was watching the game with my family, and we kind of had this discussion about bowl games and their value. Does anybody care? Apparently, though, like ESPN owns many of these bowl games, and it's still live sports. So even if attendance isn't great, although at least they announced over 40,000 people at this game, I think the fact that, you know, it was easy driving distance for many Penn State fans was an advantage. But it makes financial sense to some people, the people who put it on TV. So as long as that's the case, you know, we could complain that, you know, Penn State had a lot of opt-outs, Clemson had even more opt-outs, but it makes financial sense to put this game on TV.
Yeah, and I mean, I guarantee you that the numbers were probably good, and I have no idea this, but I bet you Penn State fans tuned into this game, I bet, like most of the fans. Even the guys that are like kind of on the fence, like I bet you those type of fans, I bet you they still watch this game because there's the Quentin Martins, the future of the Gronk. How is he going to perform? Who's playing for all these guys that opted out? Like, that's the future of this team, right? So this is a nice little glimpse to see what your team's going to look like in the future. So that's how I feel about us, at least specifically our bowl game. Now, is it up north in the weather? Do the kids and the coaches' staff and their families, do they want to go somewhere cold? No, absolutely not. I think, you know, during the middle of the season and staffs that I've been a part of, they start looking at the bowl projections, and that's one of the things, like, where's it going to be at? All right, how cool is that location? Who's been to that location before? How's that committee? How do they treat this? All of that stuff starts happening in the middle of the season, and you're always hoping for a warmer type of location. That's for sure.
Yes, no doubt about it. So let's get into this game a little bit. You talked about the things that, you know, make sense as far as fan interest. You know, we get a chance to see the younger players. But with a new coach coming in, there's an extra level of complication to this. No matter which position you look at, you mentioned, you know, like Quentin Martin, who played a heck of a game, probably made himself some good money on Saturday. Yeah. Fans, I'm sure, got excited about him, hopeful that, you know, hey, next year this is a good sign. Well, it may be a good sign, but also I think there were a lot of coaches from other programs who watched this game also and were probably impressed with Quentin Martin.
Yeah, and look, Quentin Martin isn't new to anybody's boards right now. The you know, behind the scenes, like the things that I've talked to you about when it comes to the portal in this year, the portal starts January 2nd, but it's deep right now, happening right now. All those discussions, negotiations, everything is happening right now. So for somebody like Quentin to have a game like that, that definitely helps his value and his ability to leverage when it comes to negotiations. But, you know, it is just one game. So, you know, when it comes to negotiations, that's a whole nother conversation. But you have to be, you know, somewhat realistic about the sample size and, you know, what he did. But it does show a light that this guy has a high ceiling, just like Gronk and a lot of these other younger guys.
And, you know, if you look around the roster, and let's do this a little bit, how that game went, you had many players sitting out. You go to that offensive line, and those typical names you expect to see, you know, Shelton and Dawkins and Rucci are gone. We're seeing Cooper Cousins and Dominic Rooley and Egan Boyer. And, you know, I thought they represented themselves pretty well. How did you evaluate the offensive line, Mike?
I absolutely loved how they ended the season. I thought, you know, it's been a rocky road all year, obviously. They've gotten scrutinized a lot, and deservingly so. But they came together, I felt like, you know, as like we've been that, we were so deep that we probably have 8 or 9 guys who could start anywhere in the country. So that just kind of helps maybe validate that point a little bit. But just personally, I love seeing Donald Rooley out there killing it. Just a scrapper, just a blue collar guy, my type of guy. Like, I freaking love Dominic Rooley. Though all those guys, and then you can get really excited about the Egan Boyer, who still has a ton of room to grow physically. You know, and then you have the TJ Shannon, came on strong and was kind of tossed around a little bit in the rotation this year. So I think it's very promising if you're a Penn State fan. That's how I kind of walked away from that game. I'm like, oh, that's really good to see that they actually emphasized the running game. They stuck to it, and they executed it really well.
And, you know, that's the part that gets to the core of what I do like about these games is, you know, you go into it in this panic mode. Oh, my goodness, what are we going to do without 4/5 of the offensive line? Well, turns out they did pretty well. They represented themselves pretty well. And if you look then at the running backs, you know, Quentin Martin, and I know the numbers didn't look it for Corey Smith, but I thought he also showed something too, Mike.
Yeah, I thought Cam did really well. I thought he did things not from a stat sheet standpoint. It's not going to stand out like you alluded to, but he did things in each of his reps that you saw traits that he could put up some big numbers and stat sheets down the line if he continues to develop. So I feel really good, and he's kind of unknown. That the backfield obviously is kind of an unknown since we've had two, you know, big dogs you know, in the stable for a long time. So it was good. Great to see Quentin. I hope everything works out and we're able to stick with him. And then, you know, also Cam. So having those two plus the other Tyke, the younger guys there, it's going to be interesting to see how this offseason. That's going to be a very interesting position to watch this offseason.
It is. And, you know, getting to Quentin Martin a bit, just an exceptional game. And these were guys, Mike, that prior to this past season or a year ago, we thought that most likely Nick Singleton and or Catron Allen would move on. The prospect of them both coming back really surprised most of us. So it would have been these guys getting a chance to play.
Yeah, it would have been. And so it's good to see him sticking out. I think it's probably good for their maturity and their development, especially physically, too. That, you know, he gives you another year in the weight room, and he's still a young guy. So both of those guys. So I think it's good and healthy for them, and it's healthy for the room. If you could do that year in, year out, you're going to have a pretty successful room consistently. But I was good to see because, you know, look, in the spring, or not in the spring, but in full camp, and that guy, he was pushing big time, and I was like, this guy's gonna force the coaches to play him, and Quentin Martin's who I'm talking about. I'm glad he was able to finish it. And like I said, this is just another piece.
Well, it actually very much changes the perception of both Quentin Martin and the whole running back room for the fans. I suspect the coaching staff and, you know, the new coaching staff. You know, you could know a kid from how well he played through high school, but you love to see him do it on a competitive collegiate field, which is what we got from Quentin Martin on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small sample size, though. So I think before thinking about too far down the line long term, you got to think short term with the Quentin Martins of the world. Because Quentin, like, I like Quentin. I've had to deal with his aunt and his agent, and they're great people, awesome people. You know, Terry Smith recruited him. He's an awesome kid. But at the end of the day, now that the time that we're in, that agent's got to do what's best for Quentin Martin. So that's him coming to the table to Penn State and saying, this is what I feel my client is deserved. So he's, so my point is, there's a business side of this that, regardless of how he played or whatever, that's going to have to happen in order for us to continue to move forward with Quentin Martin, obviously. But, and he's just one example of a whole roster of guys that are similar.
There's going to have to be decisions made at every position across the roster. Okay, that is it for quarter number two, Mike. We got lots more to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He is Mike Villagrana. Mike, we've been talking about the Pinstripe Bowl. Nice win for Penn State. It was nice to see. It was also kind of nice that this wasn't against just anybody. And I know Clemson may not be the same team that they were for years, or even the team we expected at the start of this season, but there's still name value to beating a Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, it's a name brand in college football. So anytime you beat a team like that, it's gonna be good. And it adds to that value of winning at the end of the season, trying to roll that momentum into the offseason. So, yeah, but beating Clemson, beating Dabo, I've never been a big fan of Dabo's. And so, yeah, I was happy to see that. And obviously they had a ton of guys that opted out as well. And, you know, something that I was thinking about was once Venables left, so I wonder if that's when the defensive recruiting kind of went down at Clemson. Because I remember when I was at Virginia Tech, you know, being in Virginia in that location, you're recruiting a ton of South Carolina kids. And I just remember them going in on some of the guys that we had recruited that, you know, to be honest, like I didn't think were Clemson caliber. But at the time when we were there, were pretty good players that can develop into something maybe. And they went on a couple guys late that we had that I didn't even personally like us taking, and then they took. Yeah. And I think there's some of that. I think the recruitment, obviously, Dabo's been the main focus of the portal conversation, especially at the beginning of the portal ascension. So I was happy that it was against the old Clemson Tigers and Dabo's.
Well, the other part to this too is, and we'll get to the quarterbacks in this game, but you've heard me say it over and over again, the quarterback is so important. when Clemson won national championships, they had NFL quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence.
Now, yeah, those guys are making a lot of money.
They really are. And, you know, we've talked about Indiana over the last 2 years. They really hit on quarterback position. So I also wonder if you combine, like what you're talking about, the recruiting may not be quite the same. Add to it, hey, you know, you're not always going to get a Deshaun Watson and a Trevor Lawrence, no matter how good you are at recruiting. But those were two home run recruits. So yeah, with that, absolutely. With that said,
to that point, Jim, I'll never forget Jim or Bill Stewart, you know, rest in peace. One of my mentors who was one of my coaches in high school or in college. He ended up being the head coach after my year that I graduated. That was the year that we lost Pitt to go to the national championship game. And then Rich Rodriguez ended up leaving in the game after. So then he ended up being the head coach, and Pat White, after that following year, which was my first year as a GA, he told the entire staff that we are all going, we is the staff he's talking to, we are all going to Pat White's Senior Bowl practice to support him, because none of us would be here right now if it wasn't for that kid. And like, you know, and it hits home for you, like somebody generational, like a player like that. It doesn't even have to be generational, but like a very good, productive college football player. If you have them, you keep them. Make keep them happy, develop them, and you'll have a chance at winning and a chance at, you know, all the goals that you set at the beginning of the season as a coach. So yeah, when you say that, I think about the Pat White story and what Bill did to the staff.
Well, that's a great story, because it also, you know, Pat White may have played his last game at West Virginia. He was no longer going to be on the field winning games for you. But that kind of sets the culture of a program. You know, we stick with our own, you know, even though he's ready to move on, we're still supporting him. That's important to the culture of a program, I would think, Mike.
Yeah, I think it's hard to compare apples to apples, because it's just not similar to anything Penn State has really kind of gone through. Penn State's always been a blue blood, at least me growing up. I'm 42, growing up, looking up the Joe Pa. And his teams, you know, Chris could probably tell you every season, every record, which is really phenomenal. But you know, Penn State, or when I was at West Virginia, Pat White, he took it to another level. He took that program to completely another level that we wouldn't have been able to go to if it wasn't for him. Honestly, he's the single best, and I'll never forget being at Penn State my first time and getting in a fun argument with a support staff member, an older guy, and I said, Pat White is one of the greatest college football players in the history of college football. And this is in 2017, 2016, maybe 15, and it just didn't resonate. But as time goes on, you realize how special some players are. And now he's in the College Football Hall of Fame. And I'm biased, obviously, because I have one catch, one touchdown in my career, and it was because of him.
So, that'll do it.
But a player like that, that changes a program, coaches are going to be grateful for that, because Pat White set up a lot of extensions, right? A lot of these quarterbacks that succeed, that like they help out these head coaches get these extensions and get everything else and all the other resources that they want. So yeah, it definitely says to the culture, but really says to the appreciation and the gratefulness from that staff that was with that particular player.
And if you're too young to remember Pat White, look him up, please. Look him up. Go find
highlights.
Yeah, he's
got the Google, man. You might see an 88 in there sometimes when we went double tight end sets or short yardage or whatever. You might see me in there.
What game? Who were you playing against when you got the touchdown from him? Do you remember?
Yeah, of course I remember. It was the only catch I've ever had in college. It was against Virginia Tech. It was a big game too. It was my redshirt sophomore year. I had just gotten a penalty. The the play before, and Rich Rodriguez was reaming me out on the sideline. My family tells me now the story about how embarrassed they were because they, you know, they had my jersey on, the name, and you know, this is a top 10 matchup early in the season. And we were on the goal line, penalty, Mike Villagran on number 88. I get reamed out, and Rich Rod had this great play action play in mind, and he threw my butt in there, and Pat White could have ran the ball. It was on the 1 yard line. And they just, there was no scouting report of me catching a ball. So it was a great call by Coach Rodriguez at that time to send me out in a route. And I was wide open, and he sent, and Pat could have ran in it, but he just flicked it to me and I caught it. So yeah, we nice little sidebar combo, a little story, but yeah.
We've got to find that clip. We really do.
Oh, it's out there. It's out there somewhere.
Okay. We'll look for it. All right. We're talking quarterbacks. Let's talk about Ethan Grunkmeyer and his performance. Well, first of all, I think he played well on Saturday, but also, Mike, I get the feeling from the point where he took over as the starting quarterback, he's pretty much gotten better every game. You're seeing him more comfortable out there. I shouldn't make it a statement. I should make it a question. Just what's the message that sends to coaches seeing the improvement from a young player like that?
Well, he's in a very odd situation right now because he's being evaluated by Coach Campbell and his staff. And if he's the one that can drive this offense and this team, right, to where Coach Campbell wants to get this team to winning those big games, right? So he's evaluating him. He's stepping up to the plate, and he's killing it. So he's making it probably just a more of a challenging situation, maybe. I don't know firsthand, but I think anybody looking at the situation, you know, the potential Rocco Beck coming, you know, a guy that has ran his system, ran it well, and it's successful. There's a lot to that. That's very valuable to have that. But now having a younger guy who has a high ceiling, hasn't reached his ceiling yet, you know, it's a tough situation because even if you brought Rocco, I was thinking about this today, I was like, even if you brought Rocco and do you try to keep and retain Gronk and then battle technically for that starting position, and then, you know, you tell Gronk, hey, you got one more year, battle this out with Rock, and we'll see what happens. If anything, you're going to be the guy next year, the following year. But at the times, that's hard to do, especially with what he's been doing on the field right now. And granted, he put those numbers up and had that game in some pretty bad weather conditions, right? And it's a baseball field, right? So it's that grounds crew isn't – it's not for a stadium. You know, it's not Penn State Beaver Stadium turf. Or grass and taking care of year-round. So you saw a lot of people slipping yesterday. You saw a lot of drop balls from both teams. So for him to still put up those numbers and have a really productive day, no interceptions, two touchdowns, pass for what was it, under 250, but somewhere around 250. That's impressive, like very impressive.
Yeah, I have
with a makeshift roster right now.
Yeah, it is. And he has I think he's shown a lot. And I'm here trying to find my stat sheet. I know it's in front of me. Just got to find the page. Here we go. 262 yards, 23 for 34. You know, well done. And he had a spectacular second half. And, you know, kudos to guys Trevor Peña and Devontae Ross, a couple of the wide receivers who – it wasn't the kind of year that they expected when they transferred in, but they still played. And, you know, they combined for 184 yards, those two, and 11 catches, or actually 13 catches.
Yeah, that play that Trevor had was awesome. I've been a Trevor fan ever since he's gone on campus, which hasn't been very long. So I was glad to see him do that. I think he's still – you know, obviously this game is an opportunity to build on your draft stock. So he helped his stock, I think, based off this one game. So I was happy to see him do that. But the receivers, they stepped up. The conditions were brutal. I don't know if anybody's played in those type of conditions, but it sucks. It sucks. It's a mental challenge to get through that. You know, people tried all kinds of sorts of things, you know, wearing no shirt pregame. You know, at the end of the day, cold.
It is, and I'll bet that football feels like a rock. All right, that's it for quarter three. One more segment to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Mike. I'm Jim. Our show is brought to you by Happy Valley United. Mike just happens to be the executive director over there. You know, Mike, we're talking about this game, and it's interesting as we go position by position how things went. It tells you just how much of a job that Matt Campbell has going forward. You know, we could see this Ethan Grunkmeyer playing well. Under normal circumstances, I'll call it, would say, hey, he gives us something to be excited about going into next year. But it's just not that easy, essentially, at every position. But it gets magnified at quarterback. Matt Campbell's going to have to make a decision. I personally could argue either way with equal enthusiasm. You know, sticking with Grunkmeyer because he has multiple years in front of him. Rocco Beck. You've been with the guy for 3 or 4 years. He's been your starter for 3 years. I could see that too. That's going to be a tough decision for him.
Yeah. And the other thing to think about it too is what their market value is going to be, right? So what's that going to be this year going into the quarterback market? I think both will be somewhat similar, around probably the same figure. You know, I don't know how many years Rocco has started, but multiple year starter, successful, pretty guy, like, yeah, potential NFL guy. Like, he's going to demand probably seven figures. And I'm on the very low end speculating. And then that's probably what Gronk, based off of what people are going to watch off his, you know, 5-6 game sample size and his age, his intangibles, his ceiling, I think he's going to probably demand the same number. So, you know, the dream of having both of them on the roster is probably not realistic, but it's a tough call. It's a tough call because you're good either way, I think, right? Potentially. You're good short term, right?
Yeah.
You'll need a backup, right? Because, you know, Smolik and you just don't have a lot of depth there. So you're going to need a backup. That's another challenge when it comes to the portal, getting a backup to come. To a place where they know they're not going to play, but there are those guys out there. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays. I think either way will be good. I don't know Rocco. I like his game, but like obviously I've been talking about Grunk for a while. I'm a Grunk guy. I think he fits Penn State's culture. I think he's got some dog in him. He's got that it factor that I always talk about. And I've talked to some other quarterbacks. I've talked to some other previous quarterbacks from Penn State, and they think the same thing. So I hope it works out that, you know, we have both of them. But I'm just a Grunk fan. I think he has this momentum going into the offseason. It could be a huge year for him next year because he can go in the offseason knowing he's the number one QB1 guy. He could take the helms of this team knowing it's his team. You know, and that's huge, right? So him knowing he goes into that first 6-5 in the morning workout, you know, he knows he's not going into that workout as a backup. He's going in as the starter. So he has to present himself differently. He has to lead. There is no, I'm the backup to Drew let me just take care of myself and have a good workout. This is my team. Make sure but this team has the tone is set to the tone that the coaches want. Like it's a whole nother game for him, a whole nother mindset that he's going into. If he does, in fact, stay with Penn State.
Yeah, it's totally different. You're not just responsible for yourself anymore. As the lead quarterback, you're responsible for the team. And there's going to be decisions made, you know, throughout the roster, Mike. And another area, you know, Penn State has been so good for so many years now at tight end. We saw again, you know, Luke Reynolds, Andrew Rapelier, without Khalil Dinkins in this game. So those two, Rapelier and Reynolds, became the lead dogs. And I just got to share with our listeners, Rapelier, when he makes that big catch on like second and 20, it's a 30-yard gain, nice catch, big play. I know you are a Rapelier guy. I know it. I send you a text message. It was just rap and exclamation marks. And very quickly with the penalty, I got to send another one. Oops, never mind.
Yeah, it was delayed. So I was like, oh, he didn't see it. Yeah, he's delayed. Usually that's me that gets the bad end of that stick. But, yeah, to your point, Jim, I've always been a big fan of that tight ends room. Dinkins opted out. So moving forward, you know, I've always loved Luke. And Rap, I didn't know as well because he wasn't working out in the offseason. He was still rehabbing. But then once Rap, you know, was cleared to practice, I automatically became a Rap guy too. So I love that room. I don't know if it's realistic that we're able to keep both of those guys. If we are, that's fantastic. I just think if you keep a guy like Gronk with a high ceiling and now has a, you know, somewhat of a proven sample size that he can lead this team with, you know, a tight end or tight ends, plural, plus you put some guys around him, you know, you have Quinn Martin. Yeah, we got a shot, right? Like that's a really, really good combination. Like to me, Rap has a chance just based off of what he's done the second half of the season to be one of the best tight ends in the country. I truly believe that. I think I texted you earlier this week because like he kind of reminds me of like the guys I looked up to growing up in high school was Jeremy Shockey. Yeah. Kind of like a loose cannon, you know, a loose cannon brute, but like you don't get those guys that are athletic. A lot of those times those guys are in the line, hand on the dirt type of guys. Not Jeremy Shockey. He was kind of one-on-one. Like he did it all and he played, you know, with, you know, just a fire. And that's kind of how I watch when I watch Rap. I think that it's funny because my son got to meet Luke at this summer at a West Shore like photo thing they had to do. And I'm helping him get, you know, from A to B. And then my son got to meet Luke, and you know, Luke, when you see Luke in person, he's huge. He's a freak. And Luke's a great dude. And then Rap is coming on, and my wife likes Rap, and he's like, "Who's that?" And I was like, "That's Rap. Hey, that's the guy that, you know, is doing the show with Hack and doing all this stuff and building his brand. You know, he's coming off this off season of an injury, he's like my favorite." And my daughter goes, "Who?" And I said, "Right there." And I pointed to him on the TV. She's like, "Oh, Rappy Poo Poo." So I don't know if I'm going to call him that, but once my daughter meets Rap, he will not be called Rappy. He will be called Rappy Poo Poo.
You know what? I suspect your daughter can get away with it. You cannot.
That's her favorite player now. Rappy Poo Poo.
That's funny. Going through, looking at a couple of these other plays, you know, the other side of the ball, the defense, and this was a defense run by Anthony Poindexter. I'm not sure how much credit, blame, anything you can give a guy who's the defensive coordinator for just one game, but that was a pretty stout performance by this defense.
Yeah, that third
with a lot of backups.
Yeah, with a ton of backups. I think what he did was he just made it relaxed for the coaches and the players. He probably dumbed it down a little bit, made it simple, and just wanted them to play loose, and that's what they did. Especially a game like that with the weather, you need your defense to play like they did yesterday. I think it was like a perfect storm, just because I think Clemson was struggling on defense, and plus with the two NFL defensive linemen opting out, it was, like I said, just like kind of a perfect storm for them to take advantage of that opportunity and kind of just smell blood, or put the foot down and go, because I just think they were susceptible to getting beat up like they did yesterday. But yeah, heck of a job by Dex and the entire staff, to be honest, to kind of get this team to what they did on Saturday, plus while everything was going on, a new staff coming in the most recent couple weeks, Coach Campbell coming in, meeting with the coaches, meeting with the players, to do all of that while, preparing for them to play like they did, it says a lot. Like, people really don't put – I don't know. I'm grateful and appreciate that probably more so than a lot of other people, because you don't really see how hard of a job that probably is to a normal person that works a 9-to-5. Like, that's tough. Now, hopefully we're able to keep Dex. I think Dex is awesome. I know Dex likes it here. He loves it here. His son just graduated. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, those, again, just more decisions that Matt Campbell's going to have to make, and he's going to have to live with, for better or for worse. And, we've been talking about some of the players, the younger players, as you said. Hey, kind of as a starting point, if you have Ethan Grunkmeyer, Quentin Martin, the couple tight ends, you're in a pretty good place. On the defensive side, there's some of the young guys. I think Darius Dixon might be another name, a guy that you've been talking about since before the season started. It's another example of a guy, boy, you really want to make sure he comes back.
Yeah, all those guys that are the priorities have already been pointed out, and they're already, made priorities by the staff. There's already been conversations with those players. So, those conversations are happening with those type of players, because those are going to be the foundation. Those guys are the foundation of this team moving forward, right? So the young guys, we were very veteran heavy. All right. And now we're kind of in the middle of the roster to the younger guys, and who's going to step up and be the leaders. Hopefully, I see it being a wrap. I see it, if everything, move forward, 3 months and all the past the portal and they're still on the team, Rapp's a leader to me, 100%, between him and Gronk. Like, they'll make that offense roll. At least everybody will be believing them. Defensively, Darius is one of the better corners that we had this year as a true freshman. It's really impressive. And what he does and brings to the table off the field, he's a leader.
And you're going to need that. And what's nice is in this game, we got to see, with all those big name stars who weren't there, with the young guys, this team was also able to play very well. All right, Mike, that's going to be it. Thank you, Mike. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.